chair of the Commission on Disability Issues. This is our August 20th, 2025 meeting. It is now 3:31 p.m. I'm going to call the meeting to order. And Brandy or Stephanie, could you take roll call, please?
Yes, I will. Sue Kroger.
Derek Espadas. Zach Coble.
Here.
Ray Jordan.
Here.
Lily Bogan.
Here.
Wesley Derbyshire. Kate Elliott.
Here.
Jonathan Lee Confer.
Here.
Perfect. All right, and we have quorum.
Great. Thank you, Brandy. Appreciate that. So our first order of business is a call to the public. If there are members of the public not affiliated with Cody directly or not affiliated with the city who have, you know, things they'd like to voice in terms of the disability community in Tucson, now would be the time. I don't see anyone, but that doesn't mean anything. So I'm going to just pause for a moment. Wait. Okay. Not seeing anyone want to voice, an opinion or, alert us to anything. I'll move on to the next agenda item, which is consideration and possible approval for the July 2025 meeting minutes. Did members of the commission have a chance to review those minutes? And if so, yes. Did anyone have any changes or additions or corrections they'd like to make? Otherwise, I would be looking.
Commissioner Bogan moved to approve the meeting minutes for July.
Took the words right out of my mouth, Lily. Thank you very much. Now I'd be looking for a second.
It's Ray Jordan here. I'll second.
Thank you, Ray. Brandy, could you call roll call for approval of the minutes, please?
You got it. All right. And so Sue Kroger, or I'm sorry, do I only call for the people that are present?
Yes.
I just wanted to double check. Yes, correct. Okay. So Zach Coble?
Yes.
Ray Jordan?
Yes.
Lily Bogan?
Yes.
Kate Elliott?
Yes.
And Jonathan Lee Comfort?
Yes.
Perfect. And it passes 5-0.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Okay. Now we go to our more substantive meeting agenda item number 4, an overview discussion of community safety, health, and wellness with Brandy Champion. So thank you very much, Brandy, for joining us, and we'd love to hear about kind of what you all do. I understand the acronym is kind of, I've heard it pronounced CASHU, but I don't know if that's how you all prefer it to be pronounced. But
a lot of people do say CASHU, but mayor's office prefers it to be said out loud, said all the way, community safety.
Okay.
Awesome. So I try not to say CASHU. Even though I'm so used to saying it that way, I try not to say it that way so that we don't spread the rumor, so to speak. Okay. Yeah, so thank you, Zach. Yes, my name's Brandy Champion. I'm the Community Safety Director at the City of Tucson, and I'm going to share my screen and go off camera, if that's okay, because I'm going to give you guys, I think I have 40 minutes. So
yeah.
I do see some familiar names on the call, Chris, Jennifer. Others I don't really know really well, but we'll get to know each other throughout the presentation. So, I'm going to give you some overview of what our org chart looks like and stuff like that. So I'm going to go ahead and share and get off camera, as I said, and we'll get started. Let's see. Can everybody see my screen okay?
We're good to go, I think.
Okay. All right. So I am going to talk today about community safety, health, and wellness. We've kind of revamped the way that the structure of this division. We are a division of the city manager's office, and we have many partnerships throughout the community. So in this division alone, we do care coordination, housing first. We have the Office of Violence Prevention and Intervention. We have an opioid strategist that straddles the county and the city, and we have a multi-agency resource coordinator who straddles the county and the city, and you'll hear more about that as I go on. So our org chart looks something like this. Whereas I'm sure that this commission has heard about Housing First quite a bit in the last 3 years, community safety has kind of been there, but also been a small but mighty group of folks, right? So on the Housing First side, we probably have 47 employees, maybe a little more, and we have about 14 on the community safety side. We have a capacity for 69 staff in total across the division. And so with the restructuring, we have done it something like this with me as the director. Christian is our staff assistant. Lee Hopkins is our community care manager, overseeing our care coordinators. They support a lot of 311 efforts, opioid initiatives and things of that nature, which you'll see as we go on. Allison is our interim Housing First director, who has many direct reports and oversees shelter, outreach, navigation, some of our COC grants that are embedded in the City of Tucson's COC, which is our continuum of care. She works very closely with TPCH and our shower program, which you'll see as we move on. We have a very new office, the Office of Violence Prevention and Intervention. We're actually in the process of getting ready to recruit that manager. We have some violence, community enrichment coordinators, and this is mostly about interrupting violence throughout our community. VIVA, our VIVA initiatives, which stands for Vitalization, our Violence Interruption and Vitalization Action. So they take a very big part of that along with TPD and other folks. This says two community enrichment coordinators, but we actually have three at this point. We have hired one of our interns that was interning with that group for some time, and she comes to us with a lot of good background. We do have an opioid strategist hired at Pima County. Megan, and I have her email here in case anybody's interested in reaching out to her to find out more about what they're doing. Megan and Brian Eller from Pima County are actually visiting my space tomorrow to just walk the building. It's about Megan. She's in about 3.5 weeks at this point at the county, so there's a lot to learn, and they'll be working on opioid strategies with our team. Justin Hamilton is our interim MARC, our multi-agency resource coordinator over unsheltered initiatives, and he's the one that helps us decommission encampments, do strategy around our parks, our homeless encampment dashboard, working with TPD and many others in the community. And we don't know yet, but I'm pretty sure that we'll have a non-direct coordinator role that coordinates all of these entities, TC3, our Housing and Community Development Services, Emergency Management, Thrive Zones, all of the things that we work with already, coordinating us and getting us all in the room at least once a month, and doing special projects around all of the initiatives that we're trying to accomplish here at the city. So our care coordination team, which Lee oversees, focuses on, which I'm sure you've all heard at one point or another, especially if you work in the city of Tucson, the right work in the right hands, right? Some housing, some homelessness and prevention work, mental health and substance abuse supports, and poverty and income stability. So there are a lot of very short-term hands-on case management, mostly around mental health and substance use, co-occurring disorders, and some homelessness and housing issues come with that. So they work really closely with our Housing First team to remedy some of those. Our care coordinators increase connection to resources and help to stabilize folks that are experiencing homelessness or housing instability or mental health issues. We have 7 care coordinators at this point. And we always run with about 2 to 3 masters in social work interns. So it's really helpful because not only are they getting real world experience, but they really get a chance to see if this is the kind of work that they want to get into. Susan Cota, who's listed here, works with our MIST team really closely, the mental health support team through Tucson Police Department. So they often come across some very tricky cases and might have to, you know, petition people into the CRC, things of that nature. Michelle Keller and George that you see here are our newest additions, and they're actually temp because our state opioid response grant is paying. George is temp. Michelle Keller's here at least for the next year and a half. We have a state opioid response grant, and Michelle Keller is our project coordinator on that, and George is here to help her. So doing a lot of outreach with our core team through TPD. That's our community outreach and engagement team through Tucson Police Department. So doing a lot of work with that. We're already seeing some good difference in the community. She's actually administered some Narcan in the community and saved lives. So it's a real thing, and it's helpful to our Tucson Police Department because we have a person right with them that can offer different types of help, detox. So also this team handles people that are in need that have been identified by 911 and TPD, the ward offices, mayor, code enforcement. A lot of different departments refer in. There is a way to refer in to our care coordinators. They also handle 311, fielding those calls. I'll talk more about that in a minute. And they're backup for our VIVA sites. So right now, one of the biggest VIVA sites that we're working on is the Fort Lowell Corridor, and we'll get into that a little more along in the presentation. Care coordination is like support, like I said, short-term support, about 1 to 90 days, and just connecting people to community-based resources. Sometimes it's by phone and sometimes it's in person. At the moment, we do have 7-day coverage of the 311 call system so that there's always someone here to answer the phone and provide a resource or call back within 24 hours. Some days, mostly on the weekend, you are doing work around calling back. You know, the weekends are slow, and providing information over the phone that people may need about eviction prevention, rental assistance, referrals to Pima Council on Aging, food boxes, daycare centers, mechanics, whatever you can think of. We are soon to be connected. We have this group connected into Unite Us or Contexture. I don't know if anybody has ever heard of it. It's through Community Cares. And it's a database that will open up so much more resources for our division. So we're in the process of getting our community safety folks connected to us. Some of our Housing First folks are already connected to that. So we're just trying to broaden our horizons and be able to give more resources. Our 311 reporting is fairly new. It's not been around a long time, but we've been, I think, 2022. Is that Chris or someone that's been here a while can also answer that. This portal is meant to take this whole initiative is meant to take the work off of the police hands of social worker. So our police department and fire and some of our emergency services and some of our other departments like parks and other things have been often charged with being social workers to people that are unsheltered or having issues or going to maybe a call of a disturbance, and you find out that it's a family that's homeless and they're using a water spigot or what have you, right? So then it's our police, it's been in the past our police's job to try to find them a resource. And that's not really police work. So 311 is a support to social work that helps take the non-emergent calls off of police hands and put this in the right place. So you can see kind of the workflow here. They recommend that you download the app, the Tucson 311 app. You request a category and submit your ticket this way, or you can call in to just 311 and get the information that you're looking for, get routed to the correct department or division. So our call takers are mostly routing calls that are people in need of food boxes, what have you. Whatever new programs and initiatives that are in there and the changes in policing that have gone on, this 311 system offers a unique opportunity for people to have an efficient and consistent call intake or a point of access for city services, evaluation of other community needs. This also gives us the opportunity to request and to track the requests that are coming in that are non-emergency 911 calls that are usually come in through 911 and need to be diverted over to 311. So we can track now how many non-emergent calls are we getting into this system. And this gives us a chance to also refer those people to non-emergency resources through the Community Safety, Health, and Wellness Program. So that's good. And other places. So they can also refer to code enforcement if it's a code enforcement issue, or DTM if it's a traffic issue or a streets issue, right? So there's all kinds of stuff that this new system does, right? So it was approved and supported by Mayor and Council in 2022, and all of these objectives were why this initiative was created. The right sourcing of non-emergent calls, diverting calls off of our 911 operators and having just 311 call takers, community safety, health, and wellness program, data mining, being able to track how many of these are coming in, our resources, and what resources are being asked for, and giving people resource connections. So community call intake for city services. If people are looking for the PHA, which is the Public Housing Authority, or, like I said, code enforcement, or the water company, and just don't have any idea how to get to those places, then 311 is the place that you call. Our homeless encampment protocol dashboard. Maybe somebody needs to report an encampment, and our 311 call takers can do that for the person over the phone. Automation of community service requests and mobile application development, right? And regional 311 partnership and expansion. Many communities are doing the 311 system to take the burden off the police. So more about our Housing First, that's also under our umbrella of community safety, health, and wellness, because we all know that housing, when you have a roof over your head, it is absolutely paramount to your health and your economic well-being, right? So if you're unhoused, all you're worried about is hustling for the next meal and struggling, right? And your health deteriorates. And so we believe that housing has to happen first in order to get all of the other things in place. Our Housing First team provides many different services, shelter services, housing navigation, voucher retention and eviction prevention as well. Street outreach and other staff supports, like our financial person. We have a financial person that's seated right in our division that provides, that manages our grants. We have a lot of grant funding. We're very heavily grant funded on the Housing First side. And she also handles our community safety budget. So one of the shelters that we have is the Wildcat Inn here in town, and it's just grown into its own thing. It's for families with children. We're also teaching a lot of harm reduction and regular everyday life skills, cleanliness, keeping your area clean, having respect for your neighbors, having respect for your landlords, things of that nature. Working with people that might be involved with DCS and many other things. Currently, our shelter operations consist of Wildcat, which the City of Tucson directly oversees with City of Tucson staff. It's currently serving families with children. We're doing a lot of medical collaboration with El Rio on site. They come on site. Their nurse practitioner and their behavioral health practitioner come on site and do outreach to folks at that site to give a medication referral or to prescribe medicines, give medical referral, you know, for well women, what have you, special pediatric stuff. It's been very helpful. Homeless work program comes on site and picks up people often. I think they're coming out there twice a week now. And people are chosen by lottery system so that people have a chance to work and get back into the workforce and feel again what it feels like to make some money. and possibly save that money towards their own self-reliance, right? Detox services when needed through Cornerstone, which is now El Dorado. We have a couple of places that we can take people if they'd like to detox or if they need to detox. And we have a lot of activities for the children, courtesy of Ward 3. So Ward 3 comes in and provides, as you can see at the table here, many different types of arts and crafts, books. They've gotten the children a lot of books. They come and do a big Christmas thing each year because, of course, this shelter is right in Ward 3. So they've been very supportive of us. As you can see, most recently, we're putting in a playground. So the children are now going to have a playground to play on, and it's fenced in, and it will have artificial turf, so it's very safe, and we really look forward to that because we have a lot of kids on property. We also oversee the properties, Knights Inn. The city of Tucson owns that, but it's operated by Pima County, and it's due to be either recontracted in December of 2025, or something else will be happening with it. But it's our building, so we have to make sure that the facility is in working order. Amphi 8, otherwise known as Casa del Pueblo, is operated by, that's the old Fire Station 8 over on King and Oracle. OPCS operates that. It's 50 beds of congregate shelter for men and women. So we have not done pallet shelters there yet. I know that was in the plans, but we are not in a place to do that yet. Desert Cove is also another city-owned shelter that the Housing First Division oversees, but CBI operates it as a shelter for women and men. Both Amphi 8 and Desert Cove are individual. No families are there. At Knights Inn and Wildcat, those are family shelters, and they're big enough to maintain the bigger families. We also have the mobile shower program in our division. I'm sure you've heard a lot about this already. Go ahead. Was somebody talking? I'm sorry. No? Okay. So, yes, our mobile shower program, you can see our driver here being funny. It was probably close to Halloween, and he's dressed like Jason. So our team is really full of drive for the work that we do. They enjoy it, and they enjoy serving the community. So our mobile shower program is about engaging with the community, right, through just a basic need that the community has. Like, you'd be surprised. Some days at Primavera, we go out to Primavera twice a week, and some days we get 40 people taking a shower. People that are, like, going to a job or, you know, just trying to maintain while they're on the street come and visit the a shower trailer at Primavera because it's also a drop-in center for homeless folks, and you can get mail there as well. So Primavera has been a really big site for us because we get a lot of traffic there. Zion City and soon two East Side locations will be on the calendar. We're hoping that very soon El Pueblo Community Safety Hub here at 195 West Irvington will be another site for the shower trailer. Our streets department is working on making us a clean out here at the hub so that we can have the shower trailer next to our cooling center. And we do operate a cooling center here at 195. It's totally self-contained. It's completely solar powered, very cool in there. We hand out snacks and we run that, I believe it's Sunday through Friday. Saturday. Monday through Saturday, that's when it's running. I think nothing's happening on Sunday. So that the shower trailer will be coming here to be next to the cooling center so that people can get cooled down and get a shower and a change of clothes because we have donated clothes, new clothing from Pima County as well. These are all the different things that it takes to run this shower trailer. So they have to haul this stuff daily when they go out. And it requires us to have the shower trailer, the Chevy 4x4, and a liftgate truck in order to carry all the supplies that we have to take to these different sites. So we also have outreach and housing navigation within Housing First. And this is like coordinated entry through our homeless management system that we have here in our area in Pima County. So we have the SSOCE program, and that's what that is. It's supportive services only, coordinated entry. So this is for folks to get an assessment done for housing, get into the homeless management information system if they're not, and be referred into a service and or housing plan if that's what's needed. We have some community safety navigators that Robert Wild, who started outreach at the city back in 2017, homeless outreach anyway, is still here, and he's now a community safety navigator. And we have our street outreach team that works really closely with our encampment our encampment protocol, and I'll get into more of that later. And these are the things they do. VI SPDAT is like the assessment that places people into a category of the type of housing they need. So it's many different questions, and our outreach folks go out and do that in the community. Community safety navigators also are really outreach workers that are just a little more seasoned. So voucher retention and eviction prevention, we've had a lot of different programs that have done this. Some of our more permanent programs is HEART, the Housing Emergency Action Response Team. That was developed using CDBG dollars to make sure that we're keeping folks that are in vouchers that are high risk for losing their voucher in that voucher. So it's intensive case management where our case managers go out to their homes and make sure they're not hoarding or that they're being a good neighbor or that they're not trafficking out of their units, things like that. So that has been a really good program, and it was a pilot, and it's gone really well. We've been able to keep some really high needs and high 911 utilizing clients in housing for a number of years at this point, for the number of years that housing first has been operational, almost 4 years. So that just shows that intensive case management is a benefit to those, even when they're experiencing high needs behaviors, right? We also partner with Pima County on the Transition Center that's down at the Pima County Jail. City of Tucson has two staff that station there and duly report to city and county. So as far as our staff support, we do have our own budget analyst within our division. She's been at the City of Tucson a long time, I think 18 years. And BSD actually allowed her to step outside of the BSD bubble and come and be in our division and live here in our division while providing the same services as BSD would. And so it's really been helpful. It's been a great experience having your eyes on your money, especially when you're heavily grant-funded here in Housing First, especially on the Housing First side, especially because of how heavily grant-funded it is. I think at last count we had about 15 grants, and we were administering somewhere along the lines of $10 million plus dollars, give or take. Quite a bit of money and funding that we have on that side of the house that needs to be managed well, and we need to know when we're running low and working on other resources. We don't have yet a hired grant manager. That was in the works. We're not too sure if we're still going to continue to get that, if they're going to allow us to have the grant manager. So I have this up here hoping that if I put it out into the universe, that will happen. Because, of course, if you're heavily grant funded, you need somebody that's always looking at that and always searching for other opportunities, right? So this person would be seated partially in HCD, probably station over at Housing and Community Development, and help Housing First maintain and ramp up the different types of grant fundings that we have and search for funding opportunities. So now on to some more of our community safety side of the house. So this is our community enrichment coordinators, and these are the folks that go into the community, and that's Oscar, Isak, and Azul. They go into the community. Right now we're focused on four different sites, and I'll get to those in a minute. All of their work is about building relationships and listening to residents and having block parties, resource fairs, what have you, workshops for adults and youth, doing leadership academies. It says coming soon here, but we've already done one series of leadership academies, and it was great. They learned stuff. The people that come into those leadership academies are the actual community members at the Viva sites that we're working on, because what this is about is it's the old PNI work that we used to do, the place network investigation. So this is where apartment complexes have a high rate of gun violence, a high rate of crime, and poverty, and people that are not speaking up against their landlord when shady practices are going on. So this is Isaac, Oscar, and Azul's job to go in and get these community members excited about advocating for themselves and standing up for themselves. People in poverty usually won't say, oh, hey, my stove is broken. They don't want to complain because they don't know how that landlord might react, if that landlord might retaliate and have them move on to something that's less affordable. And these people are literally living paycheck to paycheck. So they hold a lot of workshops, academies that help people get empowered to speak up for themselves and to advocate for themselves in a reasonable manner. They also work on some Narcan distribution, which is imperative. I just want to say to this group that they've already experienced going out to a backpack drive and having someone at the site of the backpack drive, which was an apartment complex, fatally overdose in a parking lot in the middle of the day. And unfortunately, even administering Narcan, it was too late. So it's wide in Ireland. I know that there's a lot of controversy over Narcan distribution, but we have to consider, you know, there was kids walking around getting their backpacks that day, and we have a gentleman, and the police are doing the best they can to keep that out of the kids' view, but we have a gentleman that was literally deceased in the parking lot in broad daylight. So it's an important thing that these folks do, doing the Narcan distribution, our team, the community safety team, and doing safety improvements to neighborhoods when we do have landlords that have high crime. So suggesting some lighting, fencing, riprap that might be an environmental change that doesn't allow people to hang out, or kind of like we did down at the I-10 and Congress Bridge, where they put riprap under the bridge so people weren't camping out. So these are some of the community enrichment coordinators' duties. So these are the three community enrichment coordinators, again, pictured here. And these are the four sites that they're working on. So right now we have 22nd in Prudence. We have Grant in Alvernon. We have Campbell, kind of almost to Drexel. And we have, or just past Drexel. And then we have, so this is, yeah, that was a very high crime area. And we have the Fort Lowe corridor. So the Fort Lowe corridor spreads long. It's all the way from Stone to First and beyond. We're down all the way to Oracle now at this point. And it's because of what the community was calling for. So business owners, a lot of residents, but mostly business owners were having a lot. That's a very hot area, which is also in Ward 3. We were getting a lot of hits at the Viva at that Viva site. So we're really working with police to try to clean up, get people to come inside, get people to detox, what have you, and reduce the violence that's happening along those stretches. Our opioid initiative. Right now we have the state opioid response grant, and we're working really closely with Pima County on a lot of efforts before our opioid strategist came on, Megan. We were working with Pima County to, they were going to encampments with us to distribute Narcan, the Pima County Health Department to do, medical trailers like you see pictured here, and making sure that we were just doing some real heavy engagement, building trust with folks so that they would talk to our outreach workers about coming inside possibly, providing survival supplies, water, food. We're getting ready to have a drive here very soon for heat relief stuff because it gets so hot in Arizona. And Narcan distribution or naloxone distribution, making sure people are getting what they need so that there's not overdoses. And doing whatever kind of crisis intervention that we need to, right? getting mental health care workers out there, getting the agencies that do behavioral health to go out and take care of some of these co-occurring disorders. Because usually when there's opioid and other drug use, there's some mental health happening as well. So our encampment protocol, which I'm sure you've all heard about, has been around for a minute. Mari Vasquez actually was our first multi-agency resource coordinator, and she helped us get a really good, strong policy together around encampment protocol. Justin is now the interim MARC, although he's going to have to compete for that position. He is the interim MARC, and we're in process of interviews for that position right now. Some background, I will tell you, when I started here back in 2020, the route for a complaint about a homeless encampment was an email to a person that had a whole nother job. And that was me. That happened to be me. So I would get an email. I might be able to get to it today on top of my other job. I was the COC lead when I started with the city of Tucson. So I was the continuum of care lead, running many meetings, doing a lot of notes, doing a lot of training with agencies, with our nonprofit partners, and doing this job on top of that was very hectic. So once I went into Housing First, this project went with me. That was in 2021, and then we hired Mari on and developed a strategy around something different than just an email or a phone call or a complaint. The homeless protocol's actually been around since the 80s. I have pictures from the 80s that somebody at the city of Tucson took of some of the first encampments around the base of A Mountain. So it's just done the same thing for pretty much many years. And so we developed a different strategy around this to make it more streamlined and to bring in more players from different divisions and departments so that we could have a more cohesive system and take care of this for our constituents in the community. Right now, this dashboard is what our dashboard that manages the homeless protocol looks like. This consolidates all reports into one data source so that we can pull reporting for the month. We can pull anything that the city manager's office wants, TPD. We can overlay heat maps that shows where the most concentration of homelessness is. We can tell by our harm assessment tool where a lot of crime is happening on these encampments through heat overlays and things of that nature for different questions that are asked throughout the encampment assessment tool. So it's become a pretty on-the-radar thing for the city manager's office because we've just made a really good process out of it. This is kind of everybody that's involved in our regional unsheltered coalition. So it's like a task force of people, right? So it's parks, it's the court, Suntran, core. There was an operation that was done the other day. I just talked about it, Mayor and Council, yesterday on August 12th. It was a convening of many different departments that came together to do the Pantano loop. And in that loop, I mean, the courts were out there and everything. So in that operation, 30 field contacts were conducted, one felony arrest. 14 individuals actually accepted services on site that day. 6 individuals accepted shelter placement into Wildcat, OPCS, and Salvation. 3 individuals entered detox programs, and one family reunification happened. And to make that one reunification happen, it took community safety doing the outreach and facilitating the purchase of a bus ticket back to Florida where mom and sister were, and through some flexible funding that community safety has. Community medical services provided the medication for his travel so that he didn't get sick. And Housing First ensured that he had a shelter bed for the night so that our multi-agency resource coordinator, could pick him up the next morning and take him to Greyhound's bus station. And Ward 2 contributed the gift card for his food for the bus ride home. So you can see how many people coordinate on one person. TPD was there. Community Safety, TPD was there. OPCS, Kodak, CBI, Primavera, CMS. It's just a lot. Pima County was there. It's a lot of different coordination to make these decommissionings happen. So in our encampment assessors, right now we have, I believe, 3 encampment assessors, and they are, we would prefer 5. We would want 5 because we have 4 divisions, and we would want one that was an emergency person that could float, right? But, of course, PCNs take funding. So we'll have to look into some grants or something like that. But each assessor is put into a division. Some of our faster assessors, we have Kelly Ross that used to work with TPD. She was from CBI, and she used to be with TPD at the Tucson Police Department doing outreach. She now works with us, and she handles a couple of divisions by herself. So she's pretty fast, really good at it, gets other outreach workers out there with her if she needs it. So what our intention is behind the homeless protocol is to address the basic needs, offer shelter options under a trauma-informed care umbrella, right? We're looking out for people, but we're also, it's like the stick and the carrot is what I say. We are trying to give people a way to find relief, but yet sometimes people don't accept services. Not always. Most of the time they will, but we're trying to give them a way to accept services and not just move them around and play whack-a-mole all over town. So a site harm assessment is done, and it focuses on impact to the encampment residents. So are people getting victimized in the encampment? Impact to the community? Are our business owners or our residents feeling it? And impact to the environment? Is there waste happening? Is there a lot of garbage? Are they collecting things in this camp? Are they hoarding? So we're really looking at those things through this strategy, and those are the things that determine what tier level they are assigned, which is how we administer this policy, right? So the report comes in, we figure out if it's a public-owned property or a private property, because private properties handle a different way, as everybody knows. We need a letter of trespass from that property owner, if we can even find them right away, because sometimes they're out of state, if it's just a vacant lot. So there's a lot that goes into it. Then the encampment assessor does an initial evaluation. A tier is assigned, whether it's a cleanup, monitoring, which we have steered away from monitoring at this point, and we're more about doing the 72-hour abatement, especially if it's in close proximity to a residence or a business. And sometimes there's no 72-hour, and an immediate removal has to happen for obvious reasons. They're near a school or a daycare. They are near a senior center of some kind. They're on a school or a property that, you know, we don't want, homeless encampments near our schools. If they're a real hot spot for crime, then we decide to abate them right away, and we get TPD to go with, especially if we feel there's weapons or there's been weapons seen in the encampment. Or they're directly behind somebody's house, right? Because that's what drives the most complaints into the ward offices and the mayor's office, is this directly behind the residential property stuff, and businesses. Parks has their own dashboard at this point, and we are assisting them, and they do have their own Parks and Rec staff that is now learning to post and abate people that are actually camping in the park, using the park for purposes not intended. Because we have found that to be more and more, like Santa Rita Park was, or Armory Park is a good example of that. So Laura Hemway, our director, is working really closely with our multi-agency resource coordinator. She's come up with some policy of what is reasonable use of a Jennifer probably has heard some of this discussion in the background with our city attorneys. What is the reasonable use of a park? So this is stuff that we're discussing all the time in our policy discussions, right? I'm getting up on time here, I think. So right now we do a lot of encampment outreach. MDOT, our multidisciplinary outreach team, is a multidisciplinary team for real. We have an El Rio nurse practitioner. We have an outreach person, a couple of outreach people, and we have a, from OPCS, a housing navigator that goes out with that team, and they go into the encampments together. We also, our MDOT team and our project coordinator, Samuel Magallanes, is very, she coordinates volunteer events here at our hub. People come in and build the heat relief kits and the snack kits for doing this encampment outreach, right? So a lot of faith-based organizations come in, youth groups. ELT has even been here from the city of Tucson, our executive leadership team. Our mayor will be coming here soon to do a heat relief kit building day. So a lot of good stuff happening on for the outreach pieces of us. And this is where we are located. We still don't have a formal sign. We still have our flyer sign because they plan to rehab our building. This is the old DES building, and it's huge. It's 28,000 square feet, and they're going to make this into a hub where others can join us. So we'll probably have a small substation here, as well as have TC3 have office space here. Some of our nonprofit partners will probably be able to jump in and out, and of course our staff will also be located here. But we are waiting. We're waiting for our rehab to happen. We've had a lot of meetings with SWAIM, and we're patiently waiting. So are there any questions? And I'm going to go ahead and shut this down and come on camera so that I can answer any questions that you may have around the things that we are doing.
Thank you so much for the informative presentation, Brandy. I know I have some questions, but as always, I'll defer to the other commissioners first before asking. So if anyone has any questions, come off mute or raise your virtual hand to be recognized one way or another. Okay, I'm not seeing anyone directly so I did have a few questions that I noted jotted down during the presentation. Mm-hmm. One is like the cooling station and the shower module. Are those wheelchair accessible?
They absolutely are. We do. Okay. We have ramps to get into the cooling center, and actually, we have a lot of people that partake in that frequent this bus stop over here, that are on walkers or wheelchairs or what have you. And yes, one of the showers, the actual whole trailer hydraulics down. It's like I forget what they call it, a lift, some kind of hydraulic system that makes it go all the way to the ground. And then we have this big door that rolls down to a ramp. So it's a wheelchair accessible roll-in shower on that shower trailer. So yes, absolutely.
Great. That's good to hear. And then, so when you are, it seems like community health and safety and wellness does a lot of coordination of like helping people get community resources for mental health support, that type of thing. If a person is like you mentioned doing, referrals to the CRC for, mandated care, how often does that happen? What's that process kind of look like? Because, I mean, there's other entities involved, I'm sure, in that.
Yes. So our care coordinator manager, Lee Hopkins, she's actually a master in social work. And mm-hmm. And there's other folks on our team that have a master in social work. So they, and they work closely with MIST, the mental health support team through TPD. So you have a lot of eyes on the situation that can determine whether this person is a danger to themselves or others. That's how you can petition somebody into the CRC. So if somebody's threatening suicide or verbally threatening to kill somebody or just psychotic, let's say, on drugs and mental health, they're just losing it, right? And they seem like they're going to do something silly or something's going to happen as a result of the behavior, you can call the crisis line, 622-6000, and begin a petition process. And sometimes if you don't have a professional on site like TPD or one of our a social worker to see if this person is really experiencing the things that will admit them into the CRC, then a crisis team will come out from CBI. We do have crisis teams in Tucson through CBI that will come out and assess those situations, right? And if they need police backup at that point, they'll call police and the police can go with CBI. But we do have assessment teams in the community that go out and see if the person will come with them voluntarily. If not, then sometimes there's the situation where you'll put in the petition and the person will need to be located at a later time if they run off or what have you. So that's what that process looks like. Most of the time, they try to get them de-escalated and get them into the vehicle so that they can transport, either TPD can transport them or two city employees can transport them to CRC if they're not being dangerous. If they're making self-threats, then yes, we can transport them to the CRC.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for letting me know. Just a couple more questions, unless other folks on the commission have any. I know we're running a little bit short of time, but I just wanted, like, given that, like, there's so many, like, intermixing of services and people in crisis, like, are your staff mandated reporters for, like, DCS and that type of thing, or is that something that is under consideration, or how's that work? I'm just curious.
So we're not mandated. We're not licensed, so to speak, at our shelter sites. But we, you know, we utilize common sense. If we see somebody that's being hurt, or especially a child, or even if we have a suspicion of it, we're probably going to make a report. One of the things that we have noticed over the years, over the 3.5 years that Housing First has been around, is that at our Wildcat, people are now coming forward with their kids when they're street homeless because they're no longer afraid to show up at our door homeless with their children, because homeless is not a DCS-able offense. Even though our DCS might think it that's the case, if there's nothing else going on with that family other than they're homeless, then let's give them some place to be so they can do the other things in their life that are going to get them aligned. Now, if we see some craziness going on, of course we're going to call and report that, right? And that staff always runs it by that shelter supervisor, and if she can't make the call, then we'll put it up the ladder to the Housing First director and then to myself if we need to.
Okay. And then are any of the shelters themselves wheelchair accessible, or do they accept service animals, that type of thing?
Yes, our Wildcat Inn is low barrier, so we do accept animals, and we do have a couple of rooms that is wheelchair accessible. I would like more, but that property will also eventually be rehabbed into some type of permanent housing. We just don't have a date on that yet. So, okay. And I'm sure at that time they'll make more wheelchair accessible rooms, but for the moment we only have two on our property. And the other ones do have wheelchair accessible rooms.
Oh, great. Great. I think that's all I had. I'm wondering if you could send your presentation, just because it was so informative, to Brandy Medina or Stephanie Alvarez, just so it can be distributed among the commissioners, for referral back. It's great.
I absolutely can.
Yeah. Does any of the other commissioners have any last questions for Brandy?
Okay. Well, okay. If you do, please shoot me an email. I'd be happy to answer. I'd be happy to jump on a quick call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everyone. Okay. We're going to move on into the fifth item on our agenda, consideration and possible approval of the Parks Department memorandum that Ray and I drafted. Did people have a chance to read and review that memo? People have comments or questions or anything of that sort?
I read it. I didn't put it through spell check, so I'm going to say I move to approve it. And if anyone else wants to run it through, like a spell and grammar check, but it seems to read correctly to me.
Yeah. Ray and I both put it through various checks. There was a couple rounds of grammar checking going on. So I'm fairly confident that we didn't make any obvious mistakes. But,
my screen reader read it. It sounded good. Sounded good to me.
Thanks, Lily. Any other commissioner comments or questions on it?
Comments would be that it sounds pretty clear with the actionables you guys are asking for. So that was really nice. The layout was good, and then the requests were matching it.
Thanks. Thanks, Jonathan. I think we tried to understand, what was actually possible from the Parks Department. Obviously, they don't control their funding necessarily. But they may, control staffing time and, outreach in terms of if they're going to do a master plan or not. So putting that, emphasis on accessibility and remedying ADA issues at parks, that, this would be some definite initial steps. If there are no other comments or questions, I'd be looking for a motion to accept the memo and send it to mayor and council for consideration or for their consideration.
Commissioner Bogan moves to approve the letter.
I will second.
Great. Thank you both. Brandy, can you take roll call, please?
You got it. Derek Espadas.
Aye.
Zach Coble.
Aye.
Ray Jordan.
Aye.
Lily Bogan.
Aye.
Kate Elliott.
Aye.
Jonathan Lee Confer.
Aye.
Perfect. And it passes 6-0.
Great. Brandy, you did note that, Derek, our Commissioner Espadas joined us slightly late due to technology issues.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, I got him down now.
Great. No problem. Thank you. So we're running a little ahead of where I thought maybe we would be just based on kind of prior experience. So sorry, y'all, we could probably worked in something else at this point, but we're into our announcements section. If anyone has announcements related to CODI, the disability community, stuff happening in Tucson that they would like to make the commission or the public aware of, now would be the time.
This is Commissioner Bogan. I just wanted to give a shout out to Southern Arizona Adaptive Sports and Mia Hansen. The El Tour de Tucson is coming up, and they do sponsor people with disabilities. If you would like to ride in the race, there's three different races, 32 mile, 62 mile, and 102 mile. They've got hand cycles, tandem cycles, recumbent bikes, whatever you need, they have. They don't have a huge quantity, but you can always contact Mia Hansen, the director, and she can let you know if they can assist in any way. So if you'd like to ride, please reach out to her.
Thank you, Lily. That's a good note. SAS does really great work in our community, helping us, disabled people keep active and participate in you know, community life. Ray, you had an announcement as you had your hand up.
Thank you, Zach. Ray Jordan here. I've got two, and they're kind of tenuously linked. Firstly, I've noted that looking at the CODI website that there is a vacancy for a representative from Ward 1. I'm just wondering if anybody knows whether there's progress to doing that, as that we were kind of nail-biting at the beginning of this meeting as to whether or not there would be a quorum. Linked, and we'll come, and I'll wait for an answer for that in a moment. Linked to that is the Tucson Transit Advisory Committee, of which I am, I've been appointed by Ward 2. The most recent meeting, which was early this month, was cancelled because of a lack of quorum. Four people, for various reasons, were unable to attend, which follows the previous month where a bunch of people decided that they just wanted a month off. And therefore, we missed 2 months. There's some, in my view, important business to be undertaken by that committee. I've submitted a list of, I think, about 8 different disability accessibility items that I would like that committee to address. And so we're not getting anywhere whilst there are no meetings being undertaken.
Thank you, Ray. It's unfortunate to hear that the Transit Task Force, you know, has been unable to meet due to quorum issues and just, you know, decision issues. You know, I appreciate that, you know, us here at CODI, there's only been one time in the last 2 years that I don't think we've been able to meet, and that was due to, our meeting falling on a holiday, and not really being able to figure out a rescheduled date. In terms of Ward 1, certainly, you know, we've had a Ward 1 representative in the last, probably right before you came on, but that person was unable to continue, and then Ward 1 never reappointed anyone. There's been, people who have reached out to the city clerk to be appointed at one point or another. Most of those have been appointed to represent our commission now or have. But we could try to reach out to Ward 1 specifically. Typically ward offices like a suggestion of maybe a person that, you know, they would like to appoint, just because, if anyone knows anyone that wants to join a city commission, or would be interested in the, let me know and I can reach out to them and, Ward 1 together. And I'm happy to do that. In terms of quorum, certainly the more the merrier. It is nice that our quorum rules aren't really, having to do with the amount of, the majority of, people, the majority based on the number of positions available to CODI, which has put, CODI in quorum issues in the past, when we've had a low number of CODI members. But it has to do with the majority of people sitting on CODI right now. So as long as we, you know, basically the more commissioners that we appoint up to, I think Ward 1 is our lone vacancy at this point, the more commissioners it would take to reach quorum. So right now we need 5 people to reach quorum. And if we appointed one if one was appointed to Ward 1, we would need 6. I think I have that correct. So, you know, I mean, that's not to say that it wouldn't be great to have another member of CODI. It's just that, it wouldn't necessarily help us ensure quorum all of the time. CODI's pretty active. The two members who called out today had family emergencies or other things. So that I think were kind of unexpected. Does anyone else have any announcements? Okay. I do not believe that I have any announcements right now. Possibly will next month. I probably will try to coordinate an update for the Complete Streets Coordinating Council, which I sit on for CODI, in the next month or two. That council also has was unable to had scheduled off time for the last month, and to be honest, that has to do more with the kind of where things are in our process, the coordinating council's process, in terms of funding allocations and what work still needs to be what phase of work all of those allocations are in. So it made a little bit more sense in terms of where that council is going. But I'll have more updates hopefully next in the next month or two. I think we're at the end of our agenda, y'all. So unless there's anything else, I'll call the meeting to a close. Thanks.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you. Bye-bye.
Bye.